The Trump administration is deflecting criticism that it's not responding quickly enough to hurricane recovery in Puerto Rico. More military help has been sent, and shipping restrictions have been lifted to send supplies to the island on foreign ships. Today, Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert said that federal teams have assessed most of the hospitals on the island and that media reports are outdated. Most hospitals are ready to take back patients. But that's in contrast with the view of Dr. Maria Rodriguez, who told CNN yesterday today, her community health center might have to shut down if they don't get help soon.
What else we can do? The only thing we can do is go into the shelter, do the medical evaluation, but we can't provide medications to those patients.
Let's get the ground level view from Dr. Robert Fuller, who's chair of emergency medicine at the University of Connecticut Health Center. He's on a medical mission in Puerto Rico with the International Medical Corps and has been visiting clinics and hospitals on the island. Dr. Fuller, they are depending on diesel-powered generators. What have you seen?
So what we've seen in the hospitals is the impact of the lack of power. The hospitals are having to shrink their footprint of capability. They don't have enough power to power up the whole building. Lots of buildings have some damage to some of their infrastructure, but it's the lack of power that's limiting their ability to do care.
And we're hearing anecdotally about emergency rooms with floors slick with condensation because they don't have the air conditioning that they need and there's humidity.
Yeah, so this is important. You know, operating rooms have really specific conditions to work. The humidity has to be right, the temperature has to be right, or you can't do a good surgery. We've been kind of working at the primary care levels to try to keep people away from hospitals. But what we're seeing is the hospitals that have power and can do some services, people flood them. Dialysis is particularly interesting at hospitals. Most outpatient dialysis is kind of a routine daily treatment. If you went to your neighborhood dialysis center and it's closed, where do you go next? You head to the hospital. The hospital might be set up for a small number of inpatient dialysis care, and suddenly they're responsible for community-level dialysis care.
And we've been talking about how insulin-dependent people who have to keep their insulin cold don't have the ice or the refrigerators anymore, and so that's frightening.
But a vial of insulin can sit at room temperature for 30 days and still be valuable. So what the pharmacists have been doing, because they're right on top of this, is they've been giving one vial of insulin to their diabetic patients and instructing them that it's okay, don't throw it away, it's safe and reasonable to use this medicine for a whole month, and giving them one vial.
Right. Talk about the pharmacies. We hear that the pharmacists are setting up on the sidewalks trying to sell medications to people, but one heartbreaking story about a man who needed a very important mental health medication. The pharmacist was willing to sell it to him on the street for 25 cents a pill. He didn't even have the 25 cents a pill because there's no ATMs and there's no banking and there's no credit card usage. Talk about how that affects.
And there's no communication. You know, you and I are talking. Fortunately, we're in San Juan, but as soon as I leave San Juan, yesterday we did a big loop around the island clockwise, came back through the middle of the island. The pharmacists are now kind of using a horse and pony kind of system where they put a list together, they give it to someone to get on their motorcycle and drive to a distributor and see what medications the distributor can dispense, and then they send them back to them the next day. It's cumbersome. But they have a pretty good handle on it. It's the lack of power that's going to have this downstream effect that can tumble down to lots of different diseases. And frankly, the impact on people's life is just amazing.
Give us more of a sense of that. I mean, as a doctor, you know, something that might be a small thing that becomes a big thing because maybe somebody's elderly and it's roiling hot, but also they have no way of getting out of their small town to get medical care.
Well, there are a lot of centers that have this paucity of patients, and there's this kind of discussion about where are all the patients? And to my view, it's pretty obvious. They're worried about whether they're infirmed or whether they have just a chronic illness that they manage. They have to worry about getting water first. They might spend half their day worrying about water, shelter, and security, then food. And fuel, as you've seen, is incredibly difficult to come by. So if you finally get fuel, then you have to prioritize, what are you going to use that fuel for? Are you going to use it to go to the clinic and get your medications, or are you going to go find some food or go check on your family member in a few towns over because you haven't heard from them if there's no cell service? So I feel like people are pushing down on their priority list their health care, but that will eventually have some downstream health consequences, especially people with active chronic illnesses.
Yeah. Look, you have said that the good news here is we're not talking about, let's say, a devastating earthquake with hundreds already dead or injured that need the medical care.
Mm-hmm.
But here it feels as if the problems are, you know, the infected cut that doesn't get treated or the small thing that becomes a big thing because of the lack of fuel or water. We've heard doctors there, Puerto Rican doctors there on the island, say that they worry that while the death toll was relatively low in the teens from the storm, it could be in the hundreds if these people with chronic illnesses can't be reached.
I completely agree with that sentiment. It might be the elderly person that can't get out of their home that ends up dying because they didn't get to food or water. That person might just as well have not gotten to their medicines. There's a certain cariño is the word they hear, sweetness or kindness that Latinos have, and Puerto Ricans certainly have that. And their love and respect for their elderly, whether they're primary family or neighbors, is really intense. And I know that they're being checked on. But again, that inability to move because there's no fuel, and the inability to communicate with people because there's no cell service, zero ability to communicate with people except face-to-face, is such an incredible hindrance.
Well, Dr. Robert Fuller, again, chair of emergency medicine at UConn Health, on a medical mission there in Puerto Rico. We're speaking to him in San Juan. He's with the International Medical Corps. You know, thank you so much for being there. I know you flew down on an empty, was it a United Airlines plane that was bringing back?
Yeah, that was really, of all the, you know, bad airline flights anybody might ever have had in their life, boy, this was fantastic. United kindly put us on this empty plane they were sending down. It was a humanitarian flight, so a volunteer crew. We were the only three passengers, and the crew, and by crew I mean not just the flight attendants, but the deck crew, the baggage crew, the maintenance crew, the security crew. They sent down an entire team of people, all volunteers, to help evacuate a plane full of people. And it was, what a great spirit going down there. It was just wonderful.
And you among them. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Have a good day.